Yo, what is up, lacrosse world? This is the In the Crease podcast. I'm Dan Abern. I've got Kyle Devitt up in the Shire. We appreciate y'all's patience this morning. We're getting this pod out a little late this Monday, but that's only because nothing happened this weekend. We spent the entire Sunday getting brunch. Just kidding. It was a Mondo weekend and a really cool one for me. I was at the ACC semifinals on Friday, followed that up with Johns Hopkins, Maryland on Saturday. Huge weekend to send off what more or less was the regular season. Kyle, it's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday, man. It's crazy. Regular season is practically over.
I mean, those games must have been nice. I spent all of Saturday in a bunker with no furniture doing scoreboard on the ground. It's fine. I'm not upset about it. I will say, I've been super nice lately. And I don't know why, but I just have to tell you, I don't like it. It's time to put on the black hat once again, and this is just the podcast for that to happen. I'm coming out of the woods. I'm carrying the carcass of the 2018 regular season on my back because it is dead and bleeding. We are on to the second season, Dan. Let's go get us some championships. What do you say?
I'm about it, man. Let's dive straight into the action. Best game of the weekend. Undoubtedly, right, Kyle? The rivalry.
No.
10,000 people at Homewood Field to see Maryland beat Johns Hopkins 8-7 in triple overtime. Will Snyder, the hero in this one, with a bomb to win it for the Terrapins. Great game, right, Kyle?
Oh, let me tell you about the new fake classic. Oh, my. Maryland bias at its finest. Please, please tell me how great this snoozer was. Tell me how the Homewood grass smelled. Tell me about the Miss Twisty ice cream coat and cart. Boo! I boo this game.
Hey.
Overcoached.
Hey, weak. No Miss Twist slander on this podcast. You know that. You go to our events. Mrs. Twist comes to our events. If you plan to come to our events this summer.
Oh, is it a sponsor? If it's a sponsor, I take it back.
Miss Twist,
you're right.
That cookies
delicious
and cream milkshake. Whew. All right. So, of course, I was watching this game, and I kind of had that question pop up in my head. I was like, is this game boring? Because it's a big game, it's really tight, it's really tense, and it's the same question I asked myself last year at the Syracuse-Johns Hopkins game at Homewood, where it was actually the same score. Of course, Syracuse won that game in overtime. And I said, I enjoyed it, but I don't think it was necessarily exciting. So I only enjoyed how tense this game was. It was low scoring and it was overcoached, but many people did seem to enjoy it.
Hey Dan, let me answer that question. This game was boring. Was the defense good? I guess so. You know, both teams failed to score 10 goals. I think you have to at least mention that aspect of it. Connor Kelly, hobbled by some sort of injury early and battling through it, was absolutely the most compelling thing in the game for me. It wasn't the triple OT. And I got to tell you guys, no one loves overtime more than Kyle Devitt. Nobody.
He's got the blitz, the curse.
And I have the curse. And I got to say, I've been saving this up for a while. Just because your team goes to OT, just because the game goes to OT, doesn't mean it's a good game. It just means both teams played at the same level of ability to score goals. Which, when you think about it that way, why aren't there more overtimes? You know, there were a lot this season, by the way, and there were a lot last season. But that doesn't make the game a classic. It doesn't make the game great. I think in the first 5 minutes, I was like, whoa, this is going to be great. I can't wait to watch this game. And then the cuffs got put on, man. The cuffs got put on, and I dare anyone to challenge me on that.
Okay. you talked about Connor Kelly in this game. He did look like he had some sort of injury early. I think it was in the first half. He also kept looking at his stick after he missed shots. We've all been there, man. I think he just had a bad stick day, kept kind of adjusting the strings and such. It looked like a bad scene for him. However, I do think that Pat Foley and Robert Kuhn for Johns Hopkins did a fantastic job of neutralizing him and Jared Bernhardt in this game, forcing them into a combined 0-for-24 shooting. If you told me that Maryland was going to win by one goal with those two guys going for 0-for-24 shooting, you'd probably say they wouldn't score a goal, period. So Overall, I just thought Hopkins' slides and recovery were just so well executed throughout the game. Brock Turnbull came through with a lot of big saves. And I said during the game that Maryland's depth of scoring would be challenged with those two being played so well. And we did see that shine through pretty much with Rotans, I thought, getting two crucial goals with a short stick on him. Logan Wisnowska stepped up big time in this game, too. He had the game-winning assist. And, of course, Will Snyder, the game-tying goal, and then the game winner. You know, also for Maryland, their defense deserves a lot of credit, too. Kept them in this game throughout. I thought Dan Morris played nuts at points in this game. He did almost give it up by rolling the ball into the goal. Swear to God, I think I had a half heart attack in that moment. I was like, you just can't have this game end like that. Like, imagine if you're the goalie and you let that happen.
We were talking about this game on Slack with me and publisher Terry Foy, and we both thought the ball went in.
I did too.
Like, wait a minute.
I had a good angle on it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I think this game's over. And the referees blow their whistle, and they're going to the crease, and I'm like, oh no, please don't let this end this way. Please don't. Dome gods, yeah. Help the Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Well, let's... No. Wrong team. Wrong religion. All right. Let's talk about triple overtime. Especially here. So let's talk about the awkward combo of hero ball and continuously calling timeouts. Because that's what this overtime, all the periods were a disaster. But I have a solution. Dan, I want to fix overtime.
Sure.
Are you ready? I'm going to fix it right now. No timeouts. None. You just go until someone wins. How about that? Score your goals. That's it. Can your shots. No timeouts. Just players playing the game.
I can actually get with that.
How about that?
I can get with that.
How do you feel about that? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, this was, I think the primary reason why I say this game was overcoached was that I think that every single timeout allotted to the coaches in the overtime period were called, and I actually blurted out in the Hopkins press box, oh, come on, when the millionth timeout got called in this game. Question, though. We've talked about how this game is somewhat boring, in your opinion. What if Maryland defenseman Bryce Young, who came down the field on a fast break, what if he actually scored on that long pole step down that he had? He missed by 6 inches at best. That would have made that game.
Yeah, I think it was closer than that.
But
yeah.
That, if that had happened, it would have been a defining moment in the rivalry.
It might have been a defining moment in a rivalry highlight package, but it wouldn't have made the game anything other than what it was. Like, it would have been a good ending to, in my opinion, a boring game. It was just, let's neutralize this. It was a lot of, I guess if you're into, I don't even think you could put it up to coaches being tacticians. I think it was just straight negative lacrosse. You know, like we hear that. We don't hear that term a lot, I think, in the sport of lacrosse, but you hear it a lot in soccer, for instance. You know, teams that possess and, you know, park the bus in the back to prevent shots from going in. And you can't really do that in lacrosse, but you can play a version of lacrosse where your possession is more important than scoring a goal, or getting a goal and then getting the possession is your only focus. And I think both teams did that. Like, did you see any early offense in this game?
It was too tight.
No. Like, come on. Just let the players play. I know that, like, sounds crazy, and it's almost like a fanboy reaction of, like, come on. And I was a coach. I get it, man. But at the same time, how is that fun? How is it good to watch? I know that you have to win the games, but this game could have been a classic if the tempo stayed. But both coaches went, no, we don't want to play this. We're going to play our way. We're going to control this our way. And I just think that hurts the growth. I think it hurts lacrosse. And I'm sure that many people disagree. But you can't watch this game and then watch, you know, another overtime game. You could pick any overtime game out of a hat. I think this is one of the worst ones I watched all year. And I watched like two dozen of them. I put it at the bottom because it was just watching people run around with handcuffs on. I don't want to see that. I don't think the fans want to see it either. People listening to this podcast, I doubt you want to see that either. I'm sure the Maryland fans are psyched that they won.
Yeah.
Right? Like all the people in Baltimore are like, oh, what a great rivalry. Oh, man, what a game. It's like, no, man. We saw through it. I don't care. And this is the other thing, too. Like, hold on. Let me get my – I have it around here somewhere. I have a – here's my soapbox. I don't care what the name on the front of your jersey says, ever. Ever. Sometimes I let it get the better of me, and it gives you either a mild negative connotation going into something. But once the game starts, I don't care where you played in high school. I don't care who your coach was. I don't care who your dad is. I care about what you do in the game. I care about what your team does in the game. And if you win, you get the credit. And if you don't, you don't. Like, I don't get this whole homerism of lacrosse. It infuriates me. And that's probably because I don't have any homerism. It's the only sport that I don't have any homerism in. I don't care. I didn't go to Duke. I didn't go to Lehigh. I didn't go to any of these schools. I don't care. I mean, obviously, I know what fandom's like because I have it in almost every other sport. But I don't work in those sports. I work in lacrosse, and not having fandom, I feel, is an advantage. So any advantage bias that I play up, I do so for dramatic effect and not for any other reason. I don't have any personal stake in anything. I'm glad when teams win.
Okay.
But not like this. Not like this.
It's a really tall soapbox.
Okay. I mean, I need a tall
Kyle,
one.
How long
I'm
have you been
guy.
Out of office, so, by the way?
2-3 weeks?
No, I was there last week.
Okay. Well, you know what you missed this past week? We got a brand new shipment of Trimino protein-infused water. And I swear, man, this stuff is the hot product on the corner. It is mass-destructing people out there. Quint Kesnick said that he came through the office last week and had 3 in one day. That's how good it is. That's how it's going on the corner, man. Protein is an important part of any athlete's diet. Supplement your protein diet without excess calories and fat by going with Trimino protein-infused water. Go beyond hydration with Trimino, packed with protein and B vitamins to sustain your game. Trimino has 7 grams of whey protein, no sugars, no carbs, no fats, and only 28 calories. Man, Kyle, Saturday, it was hot. You know what I could have used to quench my thirst? Some Trimino protein-infused water. I went over to the CVS, got it there. You can get it at CVS, local retailers near you, and always on Amazon. Protein never tasted so good. Whew. Kyle, T-shirt pitch of the week. You know what time of year it is? I'm going to lead you into this one. It is winning season.
Yeah, it's winning season. I'm actually wearing a red hat. And I don't have a black hat with me, so Dan's just going to have to imagine one. This is the t-shirt pitch to end all t-shirt pitches. Are you ready? Dan, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I want to make a t-shirt that just says win, period. Your, period. Games, period. It's the shirt to end all shirts. In fact, if we don't make this fudging shirt, I will make it myself and wear it to every game I cover in 2019. I am sick of the fans whining and whinging. Oh, my team's getting disrespected. Oh, we're so good, but you don't talk about us more. Oh, this player you don't know about is so good, but you never talk about him. Son, we know. Okay? We know. We know.
Yeah, it's that time
shirt.
Of year.
Win the game. Win your games. Okay?
Yeah, it's that part of the season where everybody's looking at their resume saying like, oh, we could be in here if we had beaten X team. I was like, but you didn't. Win your games. Win your games.
Ugh. Maybe the worst argument ever. If we only.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we weren't, you know, unlucky not to win that one. You know, like, what?
Gotta do it.
No. Well, if this player wasn't hurt, we wouldn't. No. You lost. Learn to deal with losing. Learn it. Figure it out.
Kyle, important conversation to have today. Tuwaratan watch. It's getting to that time. We're looking down the barrel, postseason. Feel like this year more than ever, this could come down to postseason play as to who determines getting this trophy, getting this award. Who are your guys right now? Tuwaratan.
So I have to apply the similar logic that I just espoused. Tons of people fell off this weekend.
Yeah.
Just put up garbage points. So my number one, unchanged, Trevor Baptiste. Without him, I don't think Denver wins against Marquette. I just don't. And he's at number one, undisputed. Ben Reeves popped up because Ben Reeves and Yale handled Harvard. Handled. That was not a nice game. That was a mean game. That was a statement game. He's at number two, and then Pat Spencer at number three. Because Pat Spencer's already his conference champion. Boom. Done. Everyone else, you're off. You're off. You fell off. Put up your points or get out of the saloon. You
know what I mean? Yeah, so I've actually got seven players who I think are the cream of the crop. And I don't really know off the top of my head if there is a set number of finalists that go to the banquet in early June. But I feel like six players out of the seven that I'm going to mention absolutely deserve to be there. My number one is Trevor Baptiste, greatest faceoff guy of all time. No ifs, ands, or buts. Number two, a player that we actually forgot about last weekend. The disrespect is always there. Justin Gutterding leads the nation in points. He's tied with Jeff Teat in that regard. Number three is Pat Spencer. He is third in the nation, only 1 point behind Jeff Teat and Justin Gutterding. Then I'm going with Jeff Teat.
Come on. After this
then
weekend?
I'm going with, yes, still. He's had a monster season. Then I'm going with Ben Reeves. So number six, I have the guy I have in the number six spot is not going to be a finalist because he did not make the playoffs. And that's Michael Sowers. He has 83 points and he leads the nation in points per game and assists. That's a fantastic season. And if he had made the playoffs, I think he would be at the finalist ceremony, but he's not. So number seven is a player who is more or less looking like he's going to play he's going to make the playoffs. It depends on the seed. That's Connor Fields, man. I feel like we just can't not have him at the ceremony. I know he's been hurt, but he has a ton of ground to make up in this postseason. And if he scores his way to championship weekend, what's to say that he doesn't win this whole thing? Yeah. Now, like I said, I think perhaps more than ever, this race will come down to postseason play. But the question to you, Kyle, is one thing that never seems to get discussed enough, I feel like, is what are the chances we get co-winners again? That we have a precedent that two guys can win the Tuwaratan. They might have to be brothers, but something's there. So I'm saying if Trevor Baptiste, you know, falls before Memorial Day Monday, and one of these players leads their team to national championship, could we get Trevor Baptiste and that player as the winner? Winners.
I don't think so, just because I think, not that the Thompsons winning it was a special case per se, but I think that I do believe that Baptiste has to get at least to the semifinals to 100% cement it, just because I don't think the selection committee has enough of a respect for faceoff guys.
I agree that
position historically is fairly maligned. It's only recently that in the last 15 years that, you know, that the draw has become as important as it has. I mean, I graduated college in 2003. I took face-offs. Like, there was no specialists back then. And if there were, they were all, like, at other schools. Like, Division III doesn't. Now everyone's a specialist in everything. And it's because of the emergence of the face-off position, of the technique at the faceoff position is probably more advanced in the last 15 years than any other, you know, spot in lacrosse, any other kind of area. The faceoff is the most advanced upward movement and technique based position on the field. I used to think it was goalies, and now I don't. I think absolutely you need to have a whole bag of tricks to be a faceoff guy. So I think that there's enough people historically that don't respect the position enough to, you know, I think you're right. I think someone could come out of nowhere out of this group and win it. I think that person has to be an upperclassman. So I don't think Jeff Teed, I think Jeff Teed would have to put up like 15 points a game to win it and get Cornell to the final. Do you know what I mean? I just think that they weigh that so much. Just in terms of looking at past winners, I don't think sophomores are really even being considered enough like they should be. But yeah, I would not be surprised if Pat Spencer came out of nowhere, got Loyola to the semifinals, and Trevor Baptiste somehow loses in the first round, or they lose in the Big East tournament, or he has a bad game or something, and that happens. Because I don't think it's okay. I think it's ignorant to do that. But I think the lack of respect for the faceoff position is definitely there with the committee. And I think that Baptiste has to continue to be dominant to win it.
Yeah.
But I think he should anyway. I think even if he gets bounced in the first round, he wins it. For me, I don't know, vote. I wish I did, because I would vote it right now. I wouldn't even have to look at the paper. I wouldn't even vote two or three. Just, nope, Baptiste in all three spots. I don't care. You know, like, when you're the greatest of all time at a position, statistically, you know, even the people that are, and the faceoff community is kind of weird and full of haters, but even those people that aren't, you know, of the people that like where Baptiste came from with Faceoff Academy and whatever, they will still admit that Baptiste is the best. Yeah. You know what I mean? When your haters are like, yeah, no, he's really good. He's really good. Then you should get the ultimate award, I think.
Great. Great segment. Kyle, let's move on to Sunday. ACC Tournament Championship. Just as we all expected, the team that scored two goals in a game.
How many?
Two.
Two
goals. Yeah.
Two goals?
They scored 31 goals over the weekend, emerged victorious on Sunday, and that's Notre Dame 17, Virginia 7. The team that scored two goals in a game is now pretty much going to host an NCAA tournament first round game. Damn. Yeah. Talking about this game, as much credit as I want to give Notre Dame for their stunning performance over the weekend, and we'll do that, I just feel like Virginia let this one slip in the second quarter, and the Irish just pounced on them from there. I think Virginia's depth was a concern, playing late with a lot of their number one guys on Friday night, quick turnaround, a little bit much. And I think that if they were going to make a goalie switch in this game, they should have done it a bit sooner. I thought Alex Rowe just let a few get away from him early, and it kind of just sunk him for the rest of the game. But that second quarter where, you know, I think they went in 3-2 at the end of the first quarter, and Notre Dame just rallied off several goals, a few in transition that were absolute deflators. And I was like, that is it. Ball game. Over.
Yeah, so I want to start by saying I don't have an answer for all the people that are asking what changed the Notre Dame offense. I think I'm going to try in the next kind of part of this conversation, but what I will tell you is that Virginia's defense is, in fact, not good. Now, that sounds like I'm taking away from Notre Dame's accomplishment, but I'm not. Putting up 17 goals has not been a common occurrence in Division I lacrosse this year. So doing it against a top 20 team should be celebrated, and all due credit to Notre Dame.
Yeah, the Irish looked like a completely new team, particularly on offense, and you can chalk it up to Brian Costabile and Brendan Gleeson being healthy and being back, but I just think that there's so much more to the change than just that. Like, Brendan Gleeson did not have a point in this game, and Notre Dame, notoriously low-scoring team, forever, it seems, hung 17. I would like to go back in the records and see the last time they hung 17 goals in a game, because that just doesn't seem to happen. And, you know, I think a part of it starts with Ryder Garnsey looking like the player that he was last year and demanding the respect of a Pole again and initiating against a Pole and scoring unassisted goals against a Pole. The guy has been an enigma this season, but if he can play like he did this past weekend with consistency, the Irish can be a scary team. And, you know, I read Quint Kesnick's poll this morning, and he compared this Notre Dame team to the 2016 North Carolina team that just got hot at the right time, looked really bad at points during the regular season, got hot at the right time, ended up winning the national championship. I see a lot of parallels there.
Yeah, I think this comes down to this very fundamental point. And that point is that no team in lacrosse is viable without initiators. You know, if you don't have a guy that can beat his man, the only way you can win and score goals is if you sling the ball faster than the defense can recover. And we have seen that Notre Dame is not great at the latter, but once they have the former back in Gleason and Costabile, they were able to get a presence inside and outside to score because they were making people move. I think what happened earlier in this season with their goal drought is just what you said, a lack of guys that can penetrate and cause the defense to collapse, shift, or slide. So once they got those guys back and they were able to score, you know, once they were able to get a couple goals, their swagger came back. And once the swagger came back, they were not going to get jacked. You know, the question is, can they keep that going into the postseason? And I think that if you're a coach, you know, they play Army in one more game on May 5th. But if you have Notre Dame in the first round of the playoffs, you don't want to look at the games where they scored two goals. You want to look at these last two games and see what these teams did wrong against them. I think you could look at those other games and they might tell you something, but that's not the team you're playing. That's a team with really low confidence. You know, the team that lost to Duke, A2, that's a team with real low confidence. That's not who you're playing. You're playing the team with high confidence, the ACC champions. That's no joke, no matter who you are going up against them. So you're going to want to watch the last two games. You're not going to want to watch anything else. It's not going to tell you what you need to know. And I got to say, what you need to know is how to stop the guys from getting inside on you and the inside finishers and the shots, because no one could stop them.
It was a revelation, so to speak. The team, I just thought, looked rejuvenated on both sides of the ball, to be honest. I thought, you know, John Sexton, apparently he was 100% healthy back for this game. He was a force in the middle of the field. And then I thought the young guys on that defense, Hugh Krantz and Arden Cohen, did a really good job over the entire weekend of taking away the known commodities for both teams. I think particularly on Friday night, they shut down Brad Smith and they shut down Justin Gutterding as best as they could and made other guys like Riley Walsh step up. Like I said, man, the Irish are looking pretty good right now. And I know that before this weekend, we probably did not think we would be having this conversation. So very interesting turn of events.
Absolutely. We got to thank one of our sponsors, ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying quality candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you can receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And Dan, right now, our listeners can post to ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. One more time, because free things are dope. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse right now.
Kyle, Patriot League Championship Sunday as well. Loyola 15, Lehigh 7. So Lehigh hung with Loyola for a bit here, for a half. The Greyhounds went into the half, made their adjustments, which according to Matt Kinnear's story, the players made pretty much by themselves. The Greyhounds came out and dominated the second half. scored three goals in about 90 seconds in the third quarter and pounced on them. And every team throughout this weekend was doing all they could to stop Pat Spencer. And he continues to deliver. This game, he had a goal and four assists.
So, I don't mean to belabor the point, but did Lehigh really ever have a chance in this game?
In the first half, yes. In the second half, I would say no. They were pulling off the perfect recipe for the upset in the first half, winning faceoffs, capitalizing in, broken plays and in transition. But the Greyhounds, like I said, went into that halftime period, said this is what we got to work on. They came out, fixed those things, and just pounced on them in the second half. Lehigh let it slip a little bit in that second half.
Yeah, I would argue that Lehigh didn't really have a chance, and you're right, definitely because of the second half. But my theory on that is that Lehigh is this weird combo of iso ball offense and hybrid zone defense. I think they win by confusing teams, by confounding them. They prepare for games like debate teams prepare for mock trials. Well, what does this other team do well? How can we disrupt that? How can we subvert their expectations? What can we do to change what we're doing? I actually think that sort of thinking is rare in college lacrosse, and they should be commended for it. It didn't work out here, but it got them to the championship game in the Patriot League. And the Mountain Hawks are a team that are getting better recruits, moving up the ladder, and I think they deserve credit for getting to this stage. I don't think it was a fluke. They've been tried. They're the truth. What do you think?
Yeah, it's not too long ago that, Bucknell, who was looking like a team that could contend with Loyola in this tournament, doubled them up before the start of the tournament. And, we've been hot and cold on Lehigh throughout the season, but I do think that they overall had a really good season compared to what they put out the past couple years. I think they'll be back next year. They got a good proportion of the returners and some good freshmen coming in, like you alluded to. And it wasn't too long ago that this team was a bit of a force in the Patriot League. And I think a season like this can be a springboard to build upon and kind of get back to that level of play. Patriot League, however, though, it belongs to Loyola otherwise. I mean, let's talk about Pat Spencer, man. This guy has been in the Patriot League for 3 years. And in that time, he has amassed the most points in Patriot League history. He has been Patriot League Player of the Year every single year, and Loyola has won the conference tournament every single year. The guy is undoubtedly the best player in the conference's history. And Loyola's been in the league for 5 years.
Yeah.
Nutso, man.
The thing is that Loyola, ever since their run to win the championship, has been in the national conversation, regardless of who likes it and who doesn't. And they, I think Loyola deserves a lot of credit for elevating the play of the Patriot League. I think they do, because as we've talked about before, the rivalries of the Patriot League are real. Like, teams are, the contests are hard fought. It's in the same way, though, it's hard to see, a lot of teams, play shootouts. Like, you're not going to get a lot of 18-17 finishes in the Patriot League. But that's because, by and large, the defenses are very good, and the teams are very equally matched. The schools are of similar size, which I think is something we don't talk about enough with lacrosse. I mean, and that's maybe a little too inside baseball. Like, how many scholarships does this team have versus this team? I mean, we probably shouldn't get into that on this podcast. It's probably another podcast that should get into that. But there's definitely a field that has been lifted by Loyola's, ascendance in the Patriot League. I don't think you can argue against that, really,
Yeah, man. And they look good while they're doing it, man. Like, their Cascade asses that they wear, the white and sometimes the gray, look sweet. I wonder where I can get some of those, Kyle.
Yeah, I'm not big on the center stripe. I don't know if I've mentioned it a couple times before. The helmet wars are real. Obviously, STX coming out with the helmet. But you know who had brand new helmets in this game? It's the Mountain Hawks, man. Had actual mountains on the back of the helmets. I mean, they're not like rocks too taped on the back of the helmets, but there were cool graphics on their new Warrior helmets. And you could find those on Sideline Swap. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear, shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves for up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college or pro gear. All purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com, or download the iPhone app today. And fans, be on the lookout. I'm moving some cleats. I got a great cleat collection. I'm putting up like 8 pairs. Just keep glued. Add to Kyle Devitt on sidelineswap.com.
Kyle, time for Weird Watch of the Week. I know there was a big movie coming out this weekend. I didn't even ask you if you went to see it. I just kind of assumed that you would find time. So tell me all about it.
Oh, I did, Dan. Yo, Infinity War was dope. No spoilers. Man, so good. So good. I do want to say, and I think I've talked about this a couple times in the podcast. When I was a kid, I always wanted to see my favorite superheroes on the big screen. Seeing it in this grand spectacle, as silly, as gratifying, and as wonderful as this was, there aren't words. If you have any interest in these movies, you need to go see this. One of my first loves was comic books, and actually my first literary rejection letter was from an independent comic company called Liar Comics when I was like 16 when I sent them a submission. But the thing is, like, because it's such a small community, the letter they wrote back was handwritten. It was super nice. I could tell they actually read what I sent them. And the fact that they took that time to make a personalized reply was just like, hey, man, you need more training. You have a great grasp of language. Like, you can do this. I won't lie. Getting that from some random company that doesn't even exist anymore. I looked them up. They haven't existed for like 10 years. It gave me the push I needed to study harder in school and become a writer. So the thing that I learned by watching Infinity War and kind of flashing back through all this stuff is that inspiration is everywhere. You just have to try and find it sometimes. And for me, it brought me back to that point in my life. And it's just such an inspiring movie in that regard for me personally. I get if it's not like that for you, but it was great. I can't imagine being like 8 years old and seeing it in the theater and being like, you know, there was actually a grown man 2 seats away from me weeping. Bro, took it too far. First of all, took it too far. You care a little too much. I'm gonna be real with you, but it's a testament to the impact of the movie. I mean, he wasn't bawling, but like he was like softly moaning into his popcorn, and it was like uncomfortable. But if that doesn't get you to go see a superhero movie, I don't know what does.
Maybe his popcorn just wasn't salty enough.
Maybe.
Perhaps.
I don't know. I doubt it.
It's good to hear you enjoyed it, because I actually I heard some negative reviews right out of the gate on, I think, Thursday night. So it's good to hear that those were probably just people screwing with me. So I do want to go see this movie, but dude, I haven't even seen Black Panther yet.
Yeah, you need to do that.
So if I haven't seen that and I have been sleeping on a lot of these Marvel movies, is it dumb to go see Infinity War?
Okay, I will tell you the movies you need to watch, because I was answering questions for most of the movie from my girlfriend Dawn. You need to go see Avengers, Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, Civil War, Guardians of the Galaxy 1, maybe 2, and Black Panther. So that's a lot of movies to go see. I understand. If you don't want to do that, I get it. Like, I get it. But you should see all those. If you see only those movies, I think you'll be okay. I mean, you could see, like, Thor Ragnarok. That would probably help, too. But it's up to you. It was so great because, like, every character had a moment. You know what I mean? And that was awesome. That is what I took away from it. I enjoyed that a lot, because that's hard to do. As a writer, you're trying to create characters and a storyline, and the ability to create the tension enough to give someone a great one-liner or appearance or action is just phenomenal. It was the culmination of the efforts of hundreds of people, not just to make that movie, but to make all the movies before. So maybe thousands of people. So if you didn't like it, then you didn't like any of the movies before it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a real continuation of those efforts. So Yes, you need to see those movies.
Yes, it looks like I've got some catching up to do. I've been all business lately, though, so I have no shows or movies to be weirded out by. I mean, I have been watching, like, Jersey Shore, but I think I missed last Thursday's episode. So can't talk about it. Waiting for a few weeks to watch Westworld so that I don't get too consumed in it and I can just kind of fall back into it, you know, by binge-watching maybe 3 or 4 weeks into the season. So I can't get consumed by it just yet. You know what's coming out around Memorial Day weekend, though, Kyle? And I think we should go see together.
What's that?
The Han Solo movie. May 25th, man.
You know it's going to be bad, right? But you know that. You're aware.
Yes, I've heard bad things. I've heard rumors. We don't know if the movie's going to be good, but too many good actors in it to possibly overcome one really bad actor. So I think we should go see it together, have our reaction on the championship game winning pod.
Sure.
True. True.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, let's move on to the scoreboard. Whew, it's so hard to say goodbye to so many teams. The scoreboard, this is our last big one, I think. Next week, it's going to be substantially smaller. It's so hard. All right, Kyle, let's go back to Friday night ACC semifinals, both big games in their own right. Let's start with Notre Dame 14, Duke 11. Good game from Notre Dame, played with a ton of energy and look rejuvenated on both sides of the ball. Like I said, I do feel that Duke struggled at the faceoff X and in cage more than usual in this game. And that was a big bummer for them.
I mean, are we talking about a late season Duke letdown? That's not something we saw happening. But their one weakness did come back to bite them in the end, like you said. I still like the Blue Devils and think they're not to be written off should they make the postseason. And I don't think anyone will. I'm just saying that that's something that we should consider.
Yeah, and, you know, this loss isn't fatal for Duke. I don't think they've won the ACC since 2010, maybe. I've got to check my facts there. But it's been a while, so these, you know, slip-ups late in the game are not unusual. They lost in the ACC years they won national championships in 2013, 2014. So this is definitely not fatal for them. It might actually be beneficial because it allows them to go back to the drawing board and saying, hey, this is what we got to do right. This is where we went wrong. Let's fix these things. Memorial Day is within our potential. The other game on Friday night, fantastic game. Virginia 11, Syracuse 10. It felt like every goal was crazy. And I thought UVA's defense finally put together a really good performance.
Yeah, I think Syracuse delivered the goods this season. You know, not in every game, but in terms of outperforming their on-paper prognosis, they crushed it. Like, I just want to say that. I think this was big for the UVA psyche as well, but maybe too big given what happened in the championship game.
Yeah, a little bit tough on the turnaround. Matt Moore with a big game in this one, 4 goals. Like I said, I just thought their defense, obviously, you know, 10 goals, you'd probably say that's not great defense. But no, they actually, I think, played a decent game. I thought, you know, Scott Hooper, Logan Greco did well in their matchups. Alex Rode played a great game. Could not replicate it on Sunday. But what do we think about Syracuse, though? Because going into this tournament, it felt like Duke and Syracuse were at-large locks in this conference. And now it feels possible that all four teams that made the tournament could be getting at-large bids. That's crazy. But I feel like Virginia has a better resume than Syracuse at this point. So Syracuse can't get in over Virginia.
I mean, not with this head-to-head result, no. But you have to also put into account regular season, how much is that weighed by the selection committee? How much is recency bias going to influence them? We don't know. They've done some wacky stuff. If all four ACC teams make it, I think the lacrosse world will riot. I think that there will be people will be burning stuff in the streets. Cars will be flipped.
See, that's the thing for me is that should Syracuse get in over a team like Rutgers, who beat Syracuse, then it's just stupid, man. It's just stupid. Hashtag analysis.
Numbers, bro. Win your
Crunch
games.
The numbers. Yeah, sure. Let's go to the Patriot League semifinals. Lehigh 10, Navy 9 in overtime. Damn it, Navy. We finally gave you some shine. Damn it.
Hey, Dan. Let's put a short stick on the guy everyone in the stadium knew was dodging to gauge strategery. Welcome to the bubble, Navy.
Yeah.
Welcome to the bubble.
With the way that the whole Patriot League tournament played out this past weekend, it felt like it went from being maybe a 2-3 bid league to just having Loyola in there. Because Bucknell slipped up against BU, Navy slipped up here. I think if either of those teams had gotten to the final, they would have had a really strong case to get an at-large if they had fallen. Of course, we know that Loyola was a lock either way. Let's go to the other semifinal, though. Loyola 13, BU 9. Terriers had Loyola shook again for a half year as James Burr was having a game. Like they did on Sunday, Loyola made their halftime adjustments and took care of business. Really simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what a season from the Terriers. You know, they were in this for way longer than anyone thought they would be, given the last meeting of these two teams.
23-9.
Yeah, and a goalie goal. So 24. And, you know, you just run into the buzzsaw of the Greyhounds, man. They just got, like, all the dogs. And they got razor blades on their heads. They just cut you up. It's death by a thousand cuts. You know? And Pat Spencer's the one cracking the whip. Loyola's tough, man. Loyola, I think maybe we're not talking about enough as a Final Four favorite.
Yeah. They have all the pieces there, man. Let's go to the Big East regular season matchup here. Denver 7, Marquette 4. I was just like, we all know this one doesn't matter. What matters is the matchup in the Big East playoffs next week. That's where it matters. We know what Marquette has done to Denver in those games.
Yeah, they almost did it here. I mean, this was a snoozer. I scored this. Kept checking it, hoping, praying, wishing for another two situation. But it was not to be, you know. Just can't keep Denver down, you know. I know there are people, like, especially the analytics people, don't like Denver. And that's great. Like, your numbers can say one thing, but my eyeballs and my brain tell me something else. So
yeah.
Maybe show a little respect for the Pios.
Yeah. Ivy League play, Princeton 14, Cornell 8. A little bit under the radar given the championships this weekend, but this was a big game. And the big story in this one is that freshman Princeton defender George Bond held Jeff Teat off the score sheet. Princeton, however, needed Dartmouth to beat Brown to make the Ivy League tournament. That did not happen, so Princeton season is unfortunately over. But I got to say, you know, this is an interesting result. Every single team that's going to be playing Cornell going into the future is going to watch this tape and try to break down what happened, what George Bond did to hold the nation's leading scorer completely blank.
Yeah, I couldn't get free to see this, but I speculated that Teat was hurt or something. Nope, just shut down. You know, it was not a great weekend for guys looking to get their hands on the Tuaratón. And this was the primary example of that. Princeton, too late, Princeton. Didn't win enough of your games.
Yeah.
Sucks, but that's how it goes.
Moving on to the Big Ten, Michigan 10, Penn State 9, overtime.
Dan, we aren't.
Yeah, this was a wild result and a wild game. Really shifted the whole playoff dynamic in this conference. Decker Kern had a crazy game and a sick game-winning goal in this one, juking and slamming a shot past Colby Knies in a comeback bid. That's a huge victory for Michigan to carry into next season. But Penn State is now out of the Big Ten tournament because of this result. Ohio State is back and back in the playoff picture. And it also made Rutgers Penn State win lose value. So this one, I think unexpectedly, we all knew the implications were there, but I don't think a lot of people saw this result coming. So this really changed the whole fabric, not only the conference tournament, but really a lot of at-large resumes as well. This might be a fun one to watch on replay if you're interested. Big East again. Villanova 10, Providence 9. So Villanova, 2-2 in their last four games, but they're 10-4, and they have the 10th RPI as of Sunday. It feels like they're good for an at-large if they don't win the Big East AQ, but honestly, man, that bubble is huge right now, so a little uncomfortable sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, I keep talking about the losing teams in this segment, and that's okay. Providence and High Point were tied for my hard luck team of 2018 going into this one, but Providence won it by losing despite having a last-second shot to tie it, and High Point made their conference tournament. So hard luck team of the year, 2018, Providence, so many one-goal games, so many OT losses. Tough season to be a Friar, but, you know, Villanova, they're faltering, no doubt, even though they won this. I don't think they deserve an at-large, but that's just me. But I'm not on the selection committee.
Going back to the Big Ten, Ohio State 10, Rutgers 7. So this was a weird result simply because Rutgers backdoored into the Big Ten tournament with the Penn State loss, while OSU still had to win to get in, and Ohio State responded. You know, Jasinski played well again, and freshman Jackson Reed and Justin Inacio are starting to make major, major contributions to this Buckeye team. They're like, along with Notre Dame, looking like a completely new team at the perfect time in the season, and they have everything to play for in Ann Arbor next weekend. You know, if they get to the final, I've been told that their at-large resume numbers look good, but I still feel like they've got to win the tournament to get in.
Yeah, I think maybe winning a semi would help, but I believe Rutgers was coming all the way back right up until the three-minute mark, and that's when, you know, Ohio State ran around, killed the clock for a minute, and then Rutgers couldn't produce a quality shot in the last 2 minutes. I feel like I flip-flop on the Scarlet Knights a lot, but that's because I begin to believe in them, and then they drop a game like this that's so winnable, but they lose it because they can't execute. And, like, that comes down to everything we've been saying all season long. Score your goals, execute in crunch time, win your games. And it just didn't happen for them.
Yeah, well, see, that's why it's so weird for me is that, you know, both teams entered with completely different understandings of where their season was going. Rutgers is like, oh, well, we're in the Big Ten tournament. Ohio State's like, we have to win this game to continue our season. So maybe there was that little emotional edge that provided the Buckeyes with enough spark to go out and win this game at home. Kyle, our final segment, the Adam Sharlambidas Play of the Week. And man, it was a wild weekend, so there are a lot of candidates. But I'm going to give shine to what I think might have been the most insane sequence I've seen all year. And it was in the BU Loyola semifinal on Friday. The BU goal at the end of the first half was nuts. So it starts in Pat Spencer's stick. He comes around and shoots backhanded on Joe McSorley for Boston University. It deflects off of him. It gets picked up by a long pole on the crease, and he roll dodges his way through pretty much every player on that crease. Gives it over to a short stick. The short stick tries to throw it upfield, but the ball gets, he literally throws it into a Loyola player's stick. Ball hits the turf. He picks up the ground ball. He throws it. No, he runs up the field a little bit more. Throws a dart of a pass to a long pole who is on the crease. The long pole then fakes and finishes on the doorstep. And I was like, wow. Everything there was nuts. So that's one of my candidates. I think the other one is the Matt Moore, like, step down from 15 yards near the end of the third quarter on Friday night for Virginia. Just getting disrespected from range and then deciding to unload a near corner snipe on Dom Adonna. Such an FU play. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is, we could choose any number of wild goals from the QCAA game. The Rafis jumping BTB, the Matt Moore bomb, or the Laviano fake session, one of his many goals. I kind of like the Rafis jumping BTB. The first time I saw it, I was unimpressed. But, man, if you slow down the tape and you see how little time he has to make the decision, it's crazy. The fact that he was able to get that in and in such a tight window, in the air, body control. I got to go with that one. I'm sorry. That's my pick.
That's fine. That's fine. We're getting to that point where there's so many big goals every week that it's just like, what are we deciding is the best one?
Every goal is big now. Every goal.
Every goal is big.
Second season.
Second season, man. And that's our show for today. We've talked about it throughout this podcast. It is the second season. It is winning time for these teams, which means it's winning time for me and Kyle. We are going to be bringing the heat throughout the rest of the season. You got to tell all your friends who love lacrosse to start listening to the In the Crease podcast. Subscribe to us. Give us a rating. Give us feedback. You can find me on Twitter at Dan_Aburn. Tell all your friends about the In the Crease podcast. Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, I want to thank everyone. You know, because of you, Dan and I are doing pregame shows from Gillette for the Final Four. Spoiler. I don't know how I feel about it yet. I'm a little worried. I'm a little nervous. But thank you for listening. You can find me at the Kyle Devitt on Twitter, Instagram, and as we said before, sidelineswap.com. Thanks for again for listening, for putting up with our technical difficulties here, and supporting the podcast. Please leave a review and rate us appropriately. Thanks again.
Peace.